If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
Hello, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin. This is Maltin on Movies with Baron Vaughn. And guess who's here today?
Baron to the Vaughn. That's me.
That's you.
I'm the other guy in the title.
As well as
Jesse Maltin, who's usually the part of Baron Vaughn is often played by Jesse Maltin.
Not necessarily, because if it's Maltin on Movies, you got two Maltins here, and that's
we like to say two for the price of one.
And the dulcet tones of that voice you just heard right there is our guest today.
Our guest today, we're very pleased and proud to introduce you to Lenny Abramson, the director of Room, the Oscar-nominated director of Room.
Yes,
applause.
Very
absolutely delighted to be here.
A deserved nomination.
Yes.
You're welcome for giving you an Irish accent on a podcast. You're so welcome, everyone.
You get that for free when you bring me on.
I'll pay you.
Well, Lenny, I can't imagine what the last couple of months have been like for you. I mean, getting to make the film is a project in itself. Making the film, having it turn out so well, having it be well received. But now you're in a kind of a whirlwind, aren't you?
Yeah. And it's somebody said to me at the beginning of this, when the distributor, A24, said, okay, we're going to go for an order and release, and we showed it at Telluride, and then it kind of caught a bit of fire. And then at Toronto, we won the People's Choice Award, and then it was game on. And people said, okay, be prepared. This is going to be unbelievably intense. Maybe you should move to LA. And I thought, oh, come on. And they said, and by the way, eat when food is there because you might not have time. And I said, what is this? Come on, it can't be that intense. And it is more intense than that. Mm. And last night I had the pleasure of being with the other four nominees at this event in Santa Barbara, and we were just talking backstage. And the good thing is you get to moan to each other, because if you moan to anybody else, you get hit.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because nobody
oh,
wants
poor
to hear you.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
How tough. Oh, staying in nice hotels, flying
yeah.
around the place, having people say nice things to you.
Yeah.
You get the unfortunate, things that happen after you wanted to make a film.
Yeah.
You made a very good film. Now you have to deal with all this other stuff, and people are like, that was great.
Well, you know what? It's matching energy, because if you're doing, your second or third Q&A of the day, and you've done a few interviews as well, and it's after a screening, and you're absolutely exhausted, and you're wondering, you're thinking about your laundry and whether you can, whether you have anything to wear for the next day and what time you need to get up for the flight, and somebody comes along and with great heart goes, I so loved your movie. You cannot reply with,
no.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, well, especially though with the movie that you made, you happen to make a movie that is an emotional film. So people want to come up, and I've seen this from afar. People, when there's a movie like yours, they want to connect with you.
Sure.
They want to have a moment with you. They want to have a heart-to-heart moment. And so you may be the nicest person in the world, but at the end of a 77-hour day,
yes.
when you've flown 12 different places, and like you said, maybe answer the same question, I don't know,
100 times.
800,
yeah.
900 times, then it does, at a certain point, you're like, oh, God.
But you want to give that person respect. Unless you're a horrible person,
yes.
you can't look at an enthusiastic human being and
yeah.
match that with a kind of, oh yeah, thanks a lot, listen, I've just got to go and get a drink, and I'll, so actually it does take a tremendous amount of energy.
It does.
Especially because it is what you wanted, in a way, that you wanted to
yeah.
touch people.
Yeah.
You wanted to make
exactly.
a film that moved people, and they were moved.
Exactly, and I always think that about, people who are ungracious when things go well. They don't last long. No, they don't.
they don't.
So yeah, it's a bit of it's an energy thing, but I would so rather this be the case than the alternative. I remember my very first movie, which I made in Ireland, and the distributor we got in the UK was a wonderful guy, but it was a very small operation. We drove around in his very small car all through the UK, and we went and did a screening in Wales. I think there were four people in the audience, and it was a publicity tour. And one of them was this, about 5 minutes into the questions and answers, this one guy who turns out to have been just extremely drunk, and I don't know why he came in. He must have come
a
in.
A drunk Welshman.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. He came in, he stumbled up on stage, gave me a hug, said, "I love your film," and then left. So this does beat that, I have to say.
Well, I'm not sure if that's a compliment or not.
Well, I took it as such. I mean, he obviously didn't love it enough to miss his last bus home, but yes, he did yes. like it. Yeah.
Were you at the Oscar nominee lunch?
I was, which was it was great.
It's an amazing occasion. There were 150 people there that Monday, all nominated in every conceivable category. So you have $20 million movie stars, sound mixers, Kosovo short filmmakers,
exactly,
and everything in between.
No, it was a great day because it's also – there's no competitive part. I mean, nobody's going to – you don't have to prepare your "I've just lost, but I'm really happy" face.
Yes.
You know, yes. So you can sit there. And I sat beside a really great guy that worked on in the sound department of Mad Max, but I was chatting to George Miller. And then opposite me was this guy who I thought had the coolest hair I'd ever seen. And I asked him sort of, What do you do? And he said, I write songs. And we were chatting away. I thought, oh, that's great for him. He's written a song. It must be, you know, giving him a leg up. Turns out
it was the weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the weekend.
Oh, it was the weekend.
It was the weekend.
Because I'm a little bit out of the loop.
No. It's okay. The weekend, he tried to make me touch his hair. I wouldn't do it.
Man. It's amazing, though, isn't it? It's a sort of sculpture.
I'm a little bit frightened of it. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah. Don't be frightened of it. Especially if he invited you to touch his hair.
He did.
You never refuse the offer of a Lord.
See, you were inside the lunch. I was outside the lunch.
Ah.
Yeah.
I always prefer to be inside the lunch.
Which also is a good metaphor for life.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. Right. That is true. And it was great. But then they call you up at the end and they read out everybody's name and you walk up onto what is like a sort of cake decoration.
Yeah, bleachers.
Bleachers, exactly.
I prefer cake decoration.
I do too.
Yeah, and then I was standing there, but I was one of the early ones, so I felt like the groom on top of the cake. But what was great was I was behind, so the weekend, if it be he.
It
was standing two down from me. I was beside the wonderful Emma Donoghue, who wrote Room. Mm-hmm. In front of me was Leonardo DiCaprio, which was great because all I was thinking all through it was, everybody will be able to find me in this picture because I can just tell them I'm behind Leonardo DiCaprio.
I'm behind Leo.
And my wife, of course, her only comment was, "Did you touch him?" And I said,
"Yeah,
no, because
obviously.
That would have been weird."
Obviously.
But it was make a stumble in that.
Yeah exactly. I could have chosen to do it in that way. I could have disguised it.
Excuse me.
So it was a lovely one.
Wonderful. And this week you released, and I'm glad you did because it's so unusual. Get to read something like this. You released the letter to my friends at IndieWire that you wrote that persuaded Emma Donoghue, the novelist, that you were the right filmmaker to adapt her movie. She adapted the screenplay, but you brought it to the screen. And have you ever done something like that before?
No, I've never done it. Another movie that I made called What Richard Did was loosely based on a novel that but the producer that I work at had already optioned it, and this was a different situation because Emma's novel was very big news. It was on the New York Times bestseller list by the time I read it, and I was pretty sure that we had no chance of getting it. In fact, the moment when we kind of knew we thought we weren't going to get it was. When Obama was pictured coming out of his a bookstore in Martha's Vineyard on his vacation with the novel. And I remember thinking at that
point,
this is not going to come here because we had made two art house movies in Ireland at that point. I was working on another one and Frank was sort of in the offing. But, you know, I thought, you know what, if I'm not going to get it, at least I'm not going to get it having made a proper effort. So I wrote a very long piece to her, which was, I suppose, an attempt to go, I really understand your novel. Look, I can show you, you know, like a mechanic, I can kind of show you that I understand how the engine works. And but also, I think I know how to make it into a movie. And that's not an obvious move because it's a very tricky novel to adapt. And yeah, and luckily that letter connected with her and she was talking to other people and those conversations continued. But I think whatever it was that I'd written resonated with her enough so that we eventually met. And at that point...
Well, also just reaching out in that way, though.
Yeah, and she said nobody did
showing
that.
Your own passion.
That's
I mean, that immediately for someone who writes something like this they're going to respond to that passion.
That's right. I mean, I think she knew that I wasn't just saying, hey, I wasn't just blowing smoke. You know,
yeah.
I wasn't just saying, hey, I love your novel. You know, let's talk about it. It was a very considered document, and it obviously made sense to her.
Yeah.
I'm the guy, and here's why.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Exactly. It was. Yeah. It was. You know.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm not. And I have to. I have to confess something, which was that I also tried to include as many spoilers for other pitches as I possibly could. So, there were lots of paragraphs that began with, you know, I'm pretty sure people will suggest, or it may be suggested. I tried to keep it in the passive voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you know, one argument might be to do this, but of course, for the following reasons, that would be a disaster. You know, desperately hoping that I'd covered all the bases.
Mm-hmm. Well, apparently you did.
Yeah, I mean, it's this movie for me is like a. There are a series of wonderful, kind of connections and chances and strokes of luck, any of which, the absence of any of which, would have brought it all crashing down. And standing here at the other end of it, I just feel it just seems like an incredible series of wonderful happenings.
Well, I was actually mentioning this to my dad because I don't think some of our listeners may know and some may not how rich the film community is in the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah.
And it's incredible, and I wanted to know what your experiences have been. Because you went to Trinity.
I went to Trinity, and then I came to the States.
Which has a great film program.
Well, it now does. When I went there, it didn't.
No,
I
you're in that position.
Yeah. I mean,
good theater department, though.
A good theater department. I mean, but there's a great tradition of drama in Ireland, you know, of playwriting and of literature, obviously, and of music. But film is, you know, it's taken us a while because, and people said, oh, interesting, why don't we have such a strong film tradition? Well, because it takes infrastructure, it takes, you know, it takes also, you need precedent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kids who are creative growing up in Ireland who read, well, there's a huge number of role models, to use that awful expression, to look at, not so much in film. But now we've had state support for quite a while, and the Irish Film Board's done amazing stuff. And if you look this year, it's sort of unbelievable.
It's really impressive. And Ireland is such an incredible place. It's just an inspiring place to be. And the people are – and it's fitting that you wrote a passionate letter to be able to get this film made because the people in Ireland are very passionate.
Yeah.
And very passionate people.
Known for their passion.
Known for their passion in many, many arenas.
In many aspects of the word passion.
Some of which are good and some of which aren't so.
But it's passionate.
It's passionate in all of those. I mean, the thing that I should remind people of is that it's a country of 4 million people.
Yeah.
It's absolutely tiny. It's like an American city.
Mm-hmm.
And but what we're kind of, our thing is culture, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the thing we do. In
people
the way.
Are very proud of where they're from, the towns they're from, everything.
Sure,
very proud.
Sure, and there was a great. I mean, when all the announcements came on the 14th of this month, was it this month? Yeah, wow, it feels like a lot has happened since then.
Mm-hmm.
But there was such a great vibe in Dublin. I mean, it was just...
Last month, sorry. January.
January.
We're in February now.
Oh, yeah, of course we are. It was such a
As we record this, we're in February.
Unless it's a repeat in which...
No.
Or unless we go back in time. I don't know. Is that possible?
Time is an illusion
anyway. The time-space continuum podcasts are infinite. So
we're everywhere and nowhere at the exact same time, as you were saying.
As I was saying, there was a great... There was just a real sense of excitement and, you know, and I think there's a... feeling. I mean, it's not just the nominations, but also like John Carney's film, Sing Street, which apparently is amazing. I haven't seen yet and went down to storm in Sundance. And then there are so many actors and there are cinematographers. And so, yeah, we're having a bit of a moment. And I here's my pitch. my hope is that the government will recognize that because there's been a real loaves and fishes thing. Like, there's been very small amount of money has been used incredibly well by the Irish Film Board and the tax breaks have been important as well. But actually, if there was proper investment and vision, I think we could have an incredible industry.
It's ready.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that the case has been that the people who are Irish filmmakers are leaving Ireland, but now it's that they're staying?
Yeah, I think people are staying. I also think there's a really amazing homegrown and home-based animation sector, like
amazing, it's massive.
Stuff.
Oh,
it's
great.
Incredible,
massive.
Like so, you've got Tom Moore and Secret of Kells and Song of the Sea,
right? Secret of Kells,
And then there's like brilliant companies like Brian Bagg that make amazing television. And then so across TV, film, animation content generally, there is such a bubbling, a wealth of talent bubbling away. I think we could just do amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're at a kind of an interesting, to put it mildly, crossroads, because now you were being offered films.
Uh-oh.
All kinds of films.
Have you met actor Baron Vaughn?
Hello.
I'm doing very well, but, you know, I do have a resume. But you were saying?
Yes.
You were saying, Leonard?
No. What's been the – I don't know even how to ask this exactly, but what's been the most unusual encounter or meeting you've had?
Sounds like you know exactly how to ask
that. No.
I have met – you know, it's been a very in one sense, it's been a slow build for me because I've made five films and
over 20 something years.
Started the first movie over, like the first feature was 12 years ago. So mm-hmm. it's, but making shorts, making commercials, yes. mm-hmm. in this world for
You've
that.
You've been on the time. Grind.
I have been
say.
On the grind, yeah. And Frank got me in to talk, you know, because a lot of people, even though it's a very sort of niche film, a lot of people really love it.
Oh, Frank is the film. That, if yeah. you don't know about Frank, Frank is the film. Frank's the film where Michael Fassbender has a.
He looks like
mache,
Jack from Jack in the
paper
Box.
Paper mache head for the entirety of the film.
Yeah. That's right.
That's all you really need to know.
I'm so yeah. glad you cast such an attractive actor.
Yeah, it was my revenge.
And then put paper mache over his head.
Also known as an attractor.
An attractor. He was, yeah. So, I, you know, that opened doors and things. But, yeah, nothing like the experience now, mm-hmm. since even more so since the nomination. I think what I've discovered is that I'm still most interested in the things that I've been developing with Ed, with mm-hmm. the gang of people that I work with, some of which are based on books and things we found, but some of them are just ideas that have mm-hmm. been generated internally. And I think what the new situation does is allows me to
make them happen.
Make them, and especially
yes.
some of the bigger ones.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. And the bigger ones that are big and smart, that's the hardest that's the hardest place to make, you know, bigger and also for a grown-up audience. That's
right.
a tricky place to be at the moment. But
right.
I think this gives me – because I suppose ultimately it's about – it can often be about what actors you attract, because that brings
sure.
finance and now I'm in a position where actors are interested in working with me, and so that opens up. But I also read stuff that's sent, and although it's hard to keep up with it at the moment, which is an amazing position to be in. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, if the in the Venn diagram of what I'm interested in and the circle of what I'm interested in, the circle of what the studios are interested in, if those two things overlapped, I wouldn't rule that out as a possibility.
No, well, nor should you.
And I think that some of your fellow nominees are a good role model
yeah.
to look at, because there is that balance.
That's right.
You still want to do what it is that you want to do. But of course, like in certain situations, you might have a few more people with suits breathing down your neck when you're like, oh, this is not what I wanted.
But you know, the funny thing as well for me is that I don't know, who knows what will happen, but one of the things from doing so many TV commercials at the beginning is I got – good at those sorts of relationships, because the commercials world is full of
suits.
That. It's full of suits.
I'll use the word suits.
But you know what's interesting? If you don't, I find if you don't go into that encounter with your kind of muscles already stiffened for a
yeah.
fight.
You
it's
are
ama-
Irish.
Yeah. or not. Because if you do that, then I think if you listen and if you're willing to have that conversation, people usually calm down a bit. And most people want the director to make the decisions.
Mm.
I mean, people don't want to make decisions, you know, for which they could be held accountable later. So you sort of have to convince people that to do what they really want to do, which is to hand over responsibility to you.
Right.
Well, but you also have to show them that confidence and competence.
Sure.
If you can show that to them, then they're going to go, yes, that guy.
And now you're in a yeah. position where the competence has definitely been shown.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then people – it's a virtuous circle. People want to work with you because they like what you did already. They're more inclined to
exactly.
listen
trust
to what you have to say. They trust you.
Yeah.
That's good. And if you kind of also include them in the discussion, then I think you can create pretty good environments.
Also, a really good counter argument, and anytime you disagree with somebody, you can be like, I'm sorry, how many nominations do you have? That's all you have to say.
I will resist the temptation.
No,
I'm just saying it's there.
You get a certificate. When you're nominated for an Oscar, you get a certificate, and it looks a bit like your high school graduation diploma. And so my theory is laminate that. Keep it in your backpack.
No,
and
wear it as a necklace.
Wear it as a necklace. Or
Flavor you have Flav. A
Flavor certificate.
Yeah, I'll try that. I'll see how well that goes down.
Yeah, it can only end well.
Yeah.
It can only end well for you.
All right, let's get to the heart of the matter as far as I'm concerned.
What is the heart?
The heart is, I read you were a Laurel and Hardy fan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, this matters. This matters to our family.
Welcome to your safe space where everyone agrees with you.
Oh, good. Yeah, you know what? So my dad was always really loved vaudeville and musical. Mm-hmm. And for me, there's something very beautiful about that stuff. It's not just funny. It's also wonderful. And there's a kind of – when you look at Laurel and Hardy, what you're looking at is sort of two children. Mm-hmm. You know, adults playing – And in a way, that's for me, that's how I see people generally, which is that we're all sort of struggling to make sense of a world that's just that bit too big for us to really understand. Mm-hmm. And so I was, as a kid, absolutely loved that stuff. And my very first movie, Adam and Paul, which went to Telluride, which was an amazing experience for me first up. Oh, did you?
I did see it there.
It was, that was a kind of a vaudeville. It was a Laurel and Hardy movie about a very serious thing. It was two drug addicts, but one tall, one small, one who thinks he's clever, one who thinks he's not, and both are not, you know, which is exactly what those sort of great comedy duos are based on. So, yeah, I've hidden quoted lines from Laurel and Hardy films in various things that I've done.
You know, it's gonna, that's the perfect thing to say, well, because now this
the first
one
movie,
is going to go.
There's a great one of the guys of Adam and Paul, Paul says to a lady that he's trying to, at the same time, sort of steal from, says, a lot of weather we've been having. Which is a line in the back of the stagecoach in Way Out West when Ollie is trying to woo an attractive, and then he says something like, only 75 days, shopping days till Christmas, is his other great observation in that scene.
I would like to point out, just for you today, my dad wore his Oliver Hardy
fantastic
pin.
That I'm
in
I,
honor.
I that yep. is a, that is a great honor.
And I'm born on Stan Laurel's birthday. Which in our family is probably the only reason I've been kept.
Right.
Because of that.
Have you introduced your children to Laurel?
I have. I have a box set of DVDs. Mm-hmm. And my 7-year-old boy, my kids are just getting their heads around what I do. My little girl is just five. My little boy is 7. And they know I make films and they get that. But we were watching a Laurel and Hardy about, I don't know, a month or so ago. Mm-hmm. My little boy just looked at me and said, Dad, did you make that? It was so fantastic.
I said, I wish I had. Just say yes for now.
So I've introduced them and they really like it. And that's good because stuff, you know, they also like all the Nickelodeon stuff.
Oh,
and
sure.
All that, you know?
As they should.
They're kids.
But it's the fast cutting quality of the animation they watch, for example.
Yeah.
I'm just really glad that they can also watch the kind of that the pacing of that
precision.
Oh, the precision and the beautiful choreography of the comedy. Because I did try and show my boy and his friend the first of the great Star Wars trilogy. Oh. And put it on and the text goes up and rolls up and then it opens, I think, on a sort of sandy, like there's a bit of a sandstorm in it and the camera holds and there's a slow pan and my little boy said, Dad, does anything happen in this movie?
Oh, no!
What occurred to me was, he thinks this is an art house film. Mm. He thinks he's watching Tarkovsky. You know, whereas when I was watching this
well,
was just...
Good job you, though.
Yeah, anyway,
this requires a new hope.
Yes, indeed. And I obviously beat him into submission and made him watch the whole thing.
At the end of which...
He likes it a lot. He's now a huge Star Wars fan.
Okay.
So that's
the term beaten into submission is something we say a lot at my house.
Is that right? Yeah.
People like to ask me all the time. They
very
say,
passionate.
Speaking metaphorically, of course.
Are there things that you disagree passionately about movie-wise? I'm sure there are. There must be.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. We tend to have a similar taste because they brainwashed me from a very young age.
Yeah.
So, but no, Beaten in Submission, when someone says to me, your favorite movies are black and white and from this era, that era, I go, of course they are. All of my favorite films. All of my favorite films are in black and white. Didn't you know that?
It's like, they're trying to change the channel. You're like, I can't let you do that.
If a card doesn't appear on screen explaining what's going on, I don't know what's happening in a film.
I totally get it. I think that's perfectly right. That's the way to bring up children.
Yep. Hmm.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to ask Lenny if he would share with us a film that he recommends. Something that's perhaps underrated or unsung. And he has an interesting choice. And you'll find out when we get back. Today's episode of Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn is sponsored by Howl FM. We think you're going to like what you hear with Howl. It's kind of like Netflix for podcasts. With Howl Premium, you get exclusive access to more than 120 hours of Howl originals, featuring exclusive miniseries, comedies, and documentaries, with new episodes added every week. You get all the archives from WTF with Marc Maron, and all the Earwolf and Wolfpop shows like Comedy Bang Bang, How Did This Get Made, and Our Little Show. Plus more than 60 great comedy albums, including Baron Vaughn's Raised by Cable. Get access to all of this exclusive content on your iPhone, your Android phone, or on the web for only $4.99 a month. And with the promo code MALTIN, that's M-A-L-T-I-N, you get a full month of free trial. Nothing to lose. So to redeem your promo code, make sure you create your account on the web at Howl, H-O-W-L.fm, and then enter the code MALTIN at checkout. So go to Howl FM, use the promo code MALTIN, and you'll get a one-month free trial of Howl Premium. Check it out for yourself. Listen to Spalding Gray, or Forgotten Classics, or the Canon Commentaries, or something cool. There's a wide variety of material available to you, and I think you'll enjoy checking it out. And thanks to Howl for sponsoring.
Well, we tease him a lot because we got him on. Welcome back to Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn. As you might know, I sometimes sing that song because you do know it because you listen. I'm Baron Vaughn, and that is
Leonard Malton.
And we also have a guest with
Jesse Malton.
And we have an extra special guest with
Lenny Abramson.
All right.
And we are the Four Seasons.
Got through all of the introductions. Now, Leonard asked Lenny.
My mother still calls me Leonard.
I was going to ask if your full name was Leonard.
It is. It is.
This is really magical. I'm sat between you.
And sometimes you go by Len? Is that the one?
Yeah, only my mother.
Yeah. Oh, only? Okay.
My mother and his best friends.
I think somebody else called you Len. I'm like, I'm not sure if he likes that. They called it to me in the email. Well, Leonard had a question to Lenny about a film that you that you love, that you think is underrated. That you think, or not underrated, underseen.
Needs a little more attention.
Yeah. Something that you would like to proselytize about, perhaps, a little bit.
So I picked Kenneth Lonergan's film, Margaret, starring Anna Paquin, because I think it is magnificent. It's serious. It's rich. It's about something. I mean, in particular, it's about in a way, it's a coming-of-age movie, because it's about a young woman, sort of, I think Anna, who was older but brilliantly played a teen, sort of end of high school kind of teen, I think, in New York, who is full of that sense we often have as teens that we understand the world in a deeper and truer way than our parents. And she, and also she's got that kind of campaigning, self-regarding thing that teens sometimes have, which is that things are right or wrong, and if they're wrong, we must do something about them. And she witnesses an accident in which a bus runs over a lady, a woman, and the character of Margaret decides to involve herself in the case in a way that she feels is just quite simply doing the right thing. And the result of that is something very destructive, but ultimately, I think, something which brings her to a deeper sense of the real gray and complex aspects of life.
I appreciate that you're talking about it conceptually as well.
Yeah. Without telling you
without putting any spoilers in
but
there.
But just, you know what, as a piece of filmmaking, it's such a kind of beautifully nuanced, beautifully acted, thoughtfully directed film. It feels like something that would have been made, you know, in the 70s in that great sense.
It has that vibe, doesn't it?
It took time to come out. That's the thing.
As you surely know, it's a very troubled film.
Mm.
Yeah.
Kenneth Lonergan is the man who made one of my favorite movies of past 25 years, you can count on me.
Yes. And wrote one of my favorite plays.
And yeah, which
this
one?
Is Our Youth.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Which,
that's right.
Yeah.
A very talented fellow who has a new film
yeah.
that just debuted at Sundance, which we're all excited about. And it's called
Manchester by the Sea, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah. And we'll see that before the year is out, I'm sure. But Margaret is a film he made in 2005 that didn't surface until 2011.
That's right.
And when it finally got released, which it barely did, he had to say – he was in a very tough spot. He had to say, I don't disavow this version of the movie, but it's not my preferred version
That's
of the
right.
movie.
That's right. I mean, I would love to see his preferred version. My theory about – and I will be drummed out of the film director's union for saying this – is that sometimes – I mean, in this case, there was obviously – some, you know, major issues had occurred. I have no idea what they were, but I think mm-hmm. it was very complex and difficult mm-hmm. for him. And I think I read an interview where he said he was really only getting over it now.
Mm-hmm.
But leaving aside the example of Margaret, I sometimes think that the director's cuts of movies are not as good as the...
It's true.
Do you yeah. think preferred version's a better better term than director's cut? Preferred
well,
version?
Well, I use that term very deliberately here because, yeah. okay. because he had to tiptoe through yeah. that minefield yeah. at the
okay.
time.
Mm.
So it's not as simple as a director's cut.
That's right.
There was something more complex involved here.
A cut.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Got, it's yeah. got a pretty incredible cast. I mean, that's
it does.
Matthew Broderick, Rosemary DeWitt.
Heard of, heard of her?
Jean Reno.
Yeah, Jean Reno. Kieran Culkin,
heard
Allison Janney.
Heard of her.
Mark Ruffalo,
yep,
Matt Damon, and
yep,
then Anna Paquin.
Yeah,
yeah. Heard
coming
heard
over
her.
The
Matt
brand.
Damon's part is – Matt Damon's part is superb. He plays yeah. it brilliantly. It's a brilliant piece of writing
yeah.
as well.
She was about 20-ish
when
she
did
made
it?
The film.
Uh-huh. And she's playing
and
16, 17?
Yeah. And Jeannie Berlin.
Oh, yes.
Jeannie Berlin, who is the daughter of the great Elaine May.
Oh.
And who hasn't worked a lot in recent years, but is a very gifted actress. And she is the other star of that movie.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And it's a pretty remarkable performance.
I mean, I can sort of – I think, you know, underseen is probably true of a lot of very good movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I think this is particularly underseen. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that the theatrical space is a very complicated – place now to yeah. get a very hard place to get a,
sure.
a film like that through in
mm-hmm.
and it may turn out for better or worse that those sorts of stories and told in those ways will find their home more on television than they
yeah.
will, or on, you know, on Amazon or on Netflix or whatever yeah. where people where there's a kind of a way of discovering them gradually
mm-hmm.
but putting something in the theater is so expensive
yep.
and audiences are I think encouraged to really more than before to reserve their trips to the theater for those big tentpole event
yes.
yeah. movies.
The ones that, that we told you about this a year ago.
Yeah, and we're going to tell
teasing
you about it every
teasing.
Day since.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, exactly.
I say that as Deadpool is everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's the pool.
Interestingly, I mean, I was reading, there's a very good Irish film critic called Donald Clark, and he wrote an interesting article today which was saying he had given Deadpool a sort of negative, not a savage, but a relatively negative review. And he said, my God, the vitriol from the fans.
I'm sure.
Just
I'm
incredible.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. They take these things very,
very
seriously.
Sure do.
Where are you based?
So I have two kids and I'm married and we our place is in Dublin. But I haven't been there very much in the last sort of 5 or 6 months. And I've been mostly here. But I think we're going to stay in Dublin as a family, but I think the kids are still young, and like if I'm shooting over here, I think we're just going
they'll
to do what we did on Room. They'll come.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good place to have children. Well, you know what? I feel you know very attached to Ireland and to mm-hmm. that city particularly.
I thought you were going
to
say I feel very attached to my children.
Children.
I was like, that's probably a good thing.
I'm fond of my
it's
children.
Probably a good
I'm
thing.
I'm going
to
keep them.
yeah, I'm going to hang on to them and. But I don't, you know, I think I also spend a lot of time in London, but that's like, you know, that's an hour, that's like
yeah,
LA,
it's
San
not
Francisco,
the same.
It's
right.
not,
yeah.
right.
so I can be there a lot without
right.
without the same sort of travel.
So they'll be quite worldly.
They'll be worldly. I mean, they came to Toronto when we shot Room. My little boy did half of first grade in in Canada.
Goodness.
And they really enjoyed it.
Is he
it.
The same age as Jacob?
He is about a year younger.
Mm-hmm. So did they hang? I just want to imagine them hanging out.
They did hang out. We went trick or treating in Toronto. Jake.
Oh,
that's the best thing.
Oh yeah,
ever.
Jake, Max, my boy, Nell, my girl, and us all dressed up, went around with pumpkins out everywhere trick or treating. They hung out. They came onto set. In fact, the first person who got rolled up in the rug was my boy, because we were just working on it to, you know, get sort of dimensions and stuff, mm-hmm. right, seeing how hard it was to lift him, how mm-hmm. stiff he could stay. So yeah, they haven't seen the movie, but you know, they sort of know a bit about it, and they know about Jake. The thing that really sort of broke my heart was, I remember going to studio one morning, and I was you know, you leave really early and it's hard to see the family, but so early in the morning I was saying goodbye, and my little boy Max said, "Dad, are you going to work with that other boy today?"
Oh no!
I was like, oh, so because Jake was, and you know, and to, you know, I would spend. It was such an intense relationship working with a child on a performance like that. That spans the entire movie. That's very dramatic, and the description I give is like, if you're working with an adult actor, you talk about the big picture of the character, you talk about the scene in a sort of global way, or in a macro way. When you're working with a child, it's like you're going in and helping them with each brush stroke, and you're hoping that when you pull back from the canvas, it looks like a three-dimensional, mm-hmm. You know, coherent thing. Mm. So the kind of degree of involvement in that performance and with the child was so kind of intense. Then I'd go home at the end of the night, and I was so patient with Jake. I mean, you know, it was because it was like what he was doing was so hard, so patient, and I, you know, get like come back absolutely shattered at the end of the day. And, you know, one of the kids would have the temerity to, like, you know, ask me a question when I was thinking about something else. And be, what, you know? And I thought, oh, my poor kids are getting so much the wrong end of the deal on this. So when he said that, I just thought, oh, the poor guy, you know, he knows I'm off to my colleague and his friend, the other boy.
Well, but Jake, if you don't know, so the film, you've got Brie Larson and Jacob Tremblay.
Mm-hmm, Tremblay.
Right. Tremblay.
French-Canadian.
Yes.
This
kid, he's just fantastic. He's hysterical. I've gotten to spend some time with him, but also with his dad. And I said to his dad the other day, I said, "Do you have any idea what he's going to say?" He says, "No." And we just pray it's not embarrassing.
Yeah.
but he is so funny. And he was asked, because he was in Santa Barbara.
Yes.
Last week.
That's right.
We were there with him. And he was asked on stage, "Have you seen the film? And did it upset you?" And he said, "No, it didn't really upset me, because I think because I'm a kid, so it, I just don't think that I was sad like they were all sad. I just don't think it was." And all of his answers are so – they asked about screaming.
Yeah.
Asked about screaming, same thing.
Yeah, that's right. And he said, it was a bit embarrassed to start with, but then my mom said, "Why don't we all scream?"
Yeah.
And, you know, and
he said everybody on set started screaming.
He was also asked this brilliant question before about – he said – he had said at a press conference early on, what would he do? What would he like to do when he grew up? And he said, "Well, I'd like to be an actor if I can afford it." Or if not, I'd like to be a Jedi.
And then the Critics' Choice Award.
3 months later, somebody said the same thing. He said about, you know, he wanted to act, and the interviewer said, "But what about being a Jedi?" And he said, "Apparently, that's not actually real."
Well, some people have seen, because it went viral, his acceptance speech at the Critics' Choice Award, which was hysterical and wonderful. And so the best thing about him is he's a kid.
Yeah.
So sometimes we have actors, because we're in LA, you hear these kids who sound like little grown-ups.
Yeah.
He sounds like a kid in the best way possible.
Well, that's right.
He's clearly very bright.
Yeah.
He's clearly very smart, but he gives kid answers.
No, and he's not trying to be precocious. It's brilliant. And that was so important in this, because any sniff of a performance,
it wouldn't work.
The movie wouldn't work.
Yeah, yeah.
But he said when he won his Critics' Choice Award, he said, "And I know exactly where I'm going to put it."
He said, "Yeah, I'm going to put it on the shelf beside my Millennium Falcon."
Yeah.
That's how he ended the thank
because
you.
Because those are trophies.
And it was so funny.
I wanted to know real quick if you could speak a little bit more, because you said something that was very interesting there. And it's interesting that you enjoy Margaret as well.
Yeah.
Which ostensibly is a portrayal of someone who is young, but yes. with some nuance.
Yeah.
Which I assume you connect to, of course, Kenneth Lonergan. This is our youth. There's a word youth in
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you just said something that was really interesting where you said that talking to an adult actor, you have to contextualize the macro, whereas with a child, it's the brushstrokes.
Mm.
Which is just true of how adults and children think yeah. of things in general. Oh.
Oh.
That means my meter. But
oops.
And
let me go back real quick. I'm just like – so I wanted to know if you could speak a little bit more about working with Jacob in that way, because his performance is tremendous, and it's really interesting how we as adults project like those questions of like, you must have been so upset.
Yes.
He was just living in the moment.
Well, actually, it's funny that the making of the film and working with Jake was an example of something that the film really does deal with, which is the way in which we filter the big bad world for yes. our children.
Mm-hmm.
So if you watch somebody talk to their children – there's a different voice. There's this kind of filter of something which is really telling them it's okay. It will be okay. Mm-hmm. Everything you say to a child is designed to help, because we recognize the way in which they need to have that kind of level of uncertainty that we can deal with, sort of dial down. And so in room, Ma is doing the thing that all parents do, which is to kind of create a bubble, a set of myths and a set of cozy kind of things which can which keep that kid feeling safe. She's doing that, but she's doing it in a very extreme context where
yeah.
she has to really create a kind of entire fiction
yeah.
to make sense of his world. But what drew me to the novel was recognizing that activity in myself towards my own children. And then at the same time, there's that poignant recognition that that will not be – you cannot sustain that. That it's
right.
never completely protected. It's always porous. That bubble is always porous. And as the children get older, you're going to have to allow them to come out of that and deal with deep disappointment and things that are fearful and we can't make okay.
Right.
You know? And so – but then working with Jake, it's sort of the same thing, because he's in the middle of a story that it would not be appropriate for him to fully understand.
Right.
So part of my job and Bree's job is to create a way of working with him which gives the scenes the meaning we need them to have, but allows him to operate in a world which is safe for him. So it was a really Bree even said, you know, the film keeps having these resonances. Bree said recently to me that she felt that she was now living a kind of room experience, because she's just come out of a reasonably sized normal life,
yeah,
and entered into this crazy world that she, you know, of a sort of celebrity that she now inhabits, and that's been, you know, that's happened to her so quickly. Even though she'd been acting for a long time, been brilliantly well regarded, she's now reached a point where, yeah, people will want to take selfies with her all the time, where no matter whether she likes it or not, the world has changed,
yeah.
you know? And so there are a bunch of – I think the metaphor at the center of room, which is coming out of something small and dealing with something bigger, is – that's why it's a rich one. It applies to lots of aspects of life.
Yeah. It's an amazing thing. I actually, and what's funny, and this is, I'm always fascinated by careers.
Yeah.
I know Brie Larson because she was a pop singer.
Yeah.
And I saw her open for Jesse McCartney in 2005
Holy
or something like that.
Razzle dazzle.
Wow.
I had her CD that came out.
Amazing.
She had a single.
So you're
called
saying that
she
you're
said,
a true fan.
Oh, I said this to her the other. My dad got to sit with her at the Oscar luncheon. The
yeah.
Oscar luncheon. It's you don't know who you're going to get to
That's
sit
right.
with. So my dad got to sit with her, and I said I really, really want to meet her to tell her that I've been a fan for years, because I also loved that my second time with her was United States
yeah,
of Tara,
in which she's brilliant,
where she's so good. But so I went from she had a hit single called She Said. Which actually did play on the – it did get airplay. I rewatched the video last night. It is so cheesy. I love it.
Is she wearing sort of white – like, does she
no,
have her hair – or is that something else?
No, she plays a waitress.
Oh, fantastic.
It's very cheesy. I mean, her name is Brie.
Oh.
Baron Vaughn, everybody. Baron Vaughn.
I continue what you were saying.
Baron Vaughn, ladies and gentlemen.
No,
she plays a waitress and, you know, doesn't get respect.
Right, okay.
I say this and she's like 16 in the video. But and then saw her in United States of Tara, which if you didn't get to see that show, Go, just watch it. Toni Collette.
Oh, yeah.
Toni Collette
tremendous.
Is just
She's tremendous.
Phenomenal.
Always been tremendous.
But so that's been interesting for me with Brie Larson, where all of a sudden everyone's going, oh, I know who she is. I went, no, I know who she is. And people are also realizing she was in Scott Pilgrim.
She was in Scott Pilgrim, and then she—
Which I knew.
More recently, she was in Trainwreck.
Yeah. Yes.
And she's such a brilliant comedy actress and such a brilliant, light, playful actress. And actually, that lightness— is what makes her a great dramatic actress.
Absolutely.
Because,
mm-hmm. absolutely.
You know, and I don't know whether you feel the same as me, Leonard, but I'm not a fan of the kind of cult of intensity in Emma. You know, I like actors who embody the role, who there's a sort of selflessness or the ego is put aside. And Brie is like that. And that people who can do comedy often have that ability to just and it meant also when we were shooting, Brie could go into the most intensely dramatic places. And I mean, when you see her performance, you see that. But afterwards, she would pull herself together, shake it off, come back into the room, be able to play with Jake, you know, and that was important because I don't think Jake would have understood it if she had to go off to her trailer
and cry for an hour
to get back.
Yeah.
You know, she has that lightness.
Yeah. Well, we've spoken about that a lot because Baron is a comedian. And so it's something that we've talked about with actors, that it's kind of amazing how the most incredible comedic actors also make the most incredible dramatic
Look at
actors.
Steve Carell. I mean,
lot of folks.
Absolutely.
There are a lot of folks who have. Jim Carrey.
I'm a huge Jim Carrey fan. And I think he's due again another huge dramatic role, I think.
Yeah. He has some beautiful.
And of course, the late, great Robin Williams as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, he's. Yeah.
That's right.
No doubt on that.
No.
I think we need to. Let people go?
We do.
I really enjoy that. Coming
when Lenny was in Malton Land. Let my Lenny go.
Thank you much
so
for coming by
right
today.
Now.
Listen, it was an absolute honor.
Well, it's our honor and privilege and pleasure to have you here. And we want to thank you for giving us one of the best films of the past year.
Damn Skippy.
That's
right. And we wish you many more good films, much more success, and the ability to express yourself as you choose.
Thank you so much.
And as the Aussies say, good on you.
Good on ya.
Good on ya. There we go.
Sláinte. And thanks to all of you. It was a complete pleasure to come in.
We'll be seeing you again next week, everybody. Until then, Baron, where can they find you?
Me? Well, you can find me on the Twitter, BARVONBLAQ. Second season of Grace and Frankie, coming out May 6th.
Ooh, people will be very happy to hear that.
Leonard, what about yourself?
I'm at Leonard Maltin on Twitter, and I'm at my website, day and night, at leonardmaltin.com.
You talk about this and that on
I do.
Site,
I do it all the time.
Okay. Both this.
Both this and that.
That's right. In the words of Vera Lynn, we'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when. Well, next week. Bye-bye.
Hey, Earwolf listeners. This is Hillary Frank from The Longest Shortest Time, where we ask the hard-hitting questions.
What will happen if I don't have a shadow? What does the Tooth Fairy do with her tooth?
Am I the real Batman?
Who's Jesus' grandparents?
John Willis, age 3. Bringing out the big guns. I'm actually, like, rattled.
The Longest Shortest Time. It's the parenting show for everyone. Listen at longestshortesttime.com, earwolf.com, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Pop.
Pop?
Pop.
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 Pop. Pop.
This has been a Wolf Pop production. Executive produced by Paul Scheer, Adam Sachs, Chris Bannon, and Matt Gourley. For more information and content, visit wolfpop.com.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.